Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Samach Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the Gemara at the bottom of Samach Gimel Amid Beis. In our previous shiur, we started the sugya, introduced it, but because we had finished to the bottom of the daf, felt appropriate that to pause at that given point. In order to get back into it, we can take advantage of our topic heading and structural note that accompanies every new sugya in the Gemara Markings Shas Ozer Shas edition. You'll notice that the lower part of Samach Gimel Amid Beis, we have a nosei, topic, and mivneh, structural note combined. You see a triangle feature there, and we note three nisyonos, three attempts on the part of the Gemara that starts over there and continues down Samach Dalet Amid Aleph, lehashvois bein shnei shitois tanoim, attempts to parallel two Tanaic opinions, lomar ve'inyan Shabbos, to say within the context of Shabbos the following rule or principle, kol hecho de'efsher lo tarchinon, wherever one can reduce the amount of tircha, of expended efforts, we will strive to reduce. As far as the markings are concerned, we will also notice, as we started already in our previous year, a double underline used for denoting the expression Omru Davar Echad, the attempt of the Gemara to parallel the two Tanaic opinions at every given stage of the Gemara. Today's shir will open up with the inverted triangle, Dechia, HaGemara Tatsia B'chol Pam, the Gemara at each stage will suggest Shiesh L'chalek, that there is room to make a distinction Bein HaNesibos, between the background and causes of each particular case. Bishlavei HaDechia, at each stage of deflection, Simanu HaHevdelim, we will be using a diamond to point out the differences between the two realms that are represented by each one of the respective two Tanoim at each stage. Before going on, just to get a map of things, we notice in the Gemara, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a triangle with a 1 in it. This we saw at the end of our previous year. We started the first stage of creating a parallel. The parallel was then is then shown to be deflected with the inverted triangle, and in that space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, we're keeping a running account through the use of geometric forms of where we are holding at any given point. So as you can see, where the 1 in the triangle appeared with a vertical dashed line, it then encountered an inverted triangle indicating that the attempt to parallel can be questioned. And that questioning stage of Gemara continues till the upper part of Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. And if you follow that dashed vertical line, you'll then encounter a number 2 with a triangle point up, which represents the second stage or attempt of the Gemara to parallel two deos of Tanoim that seemingly communicate this idea that wherever one can reduce expended efforts on Shabbos, we would opt for that approach. After a while, the vertical line continues down, and you then encounter an inverted triangle, which indicates that at that point, the Gemara will reject the parallel. And finally, you get to the third triangle, point facing up, which is opposite the last narrow line of the Gemara on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph, where the marking continues till you reach the third wide line of the Gemara there, with another inverted triangle, which is a rejection which extends another few lines, at which point the sugya ends. So that even though there is a drawing or an attempt on the part of the Gemara where one is drawn into feeling that one can parallel two Tanaic opinions showing that they agree on this point of kol heichod efsher lo tarchinon, wherever we can reduce the tircha, we would strive for that. Nevertheless, the attempt to draw that parallel does not seem to be a solid attempt, or does not seem to be successful. So the first attempt, and we had learned this in our previous shiur, had to do with paralleling Rabbi Shmuel, whom we saw in our Mishnah, who made a distinction between the Omer brought on Shabbos versus that which is brought on a weekday. The Omer brought on Shabbos, the Mishnah said, one would harvest only three sa'ah, as opposed to the harvesting of the Omer on a weekday. If the 16th of Nisan came out on a weekday, then the harvesting would involve five saw. So we saw Rabbi Shmuel said, listen, since you can extract an isoron, or produce an isoron of final product, of final soilus, final flour, from three saw, why bother harvesting more? Why bother harvesting five? And we must note parenthetically, but this point will become prominent later in the Gemara, that in harvesting five saw, ultimately, you will get a better quality final product flour. But nevertheless, you can get a good final product by harvesting three saw. Only in that case, you will have to expend greater energy in the sifting process. You'll have to sift more times. But as far as amount of harvesting, when it comes to Shabbos, Rabbi Shmuel says, do less. That idea seems to reflect the idea of kol heichod de efsher lo tarchinan. If you can do less when it comes to Shabbos and still accomplish your goal, so then do the lesser amount. We should note as well that the Chachomim in the Mishnah feel there is no distinction to be made between Shabbos and Chol. If whatever you would do on the Chol to achieve your ends, do the same thing on Shabbos. That's the Shitas Chachomim. So in the meantime, we saw the more parallel Rabbi Shmuel with regard to the Omer, which stated on Shabbos, harvest less, invest less effort in the harvesting. And we saw a Rabbi Shmuel Benoi Shel Rabbi Yochanan Broika, another Tanaic, another person, albeit the same first name, but a different Tanaic authority, Rabbi Shmuel Benoi Shel Rabbi Yochanan Broika, in the context of the skinning of a Pesach, Korban Pesach, a sacrificed Korban Pesach. He said, skin as when the 14th of Nisan, which is the time for our offering the Korban Pesach, comes out on a Shabbos, skin minimally in order to, at the one hand, accomplish the goal of extracting the innards of that animal that are placed on the Mizbeach. And at the same time, reducing the amount of effort invested in the skinning. So there he suggested skin until the chazeh, that section of the animal, as opposed to the chachamim who talk about an entire skinning job, even though it happens to be Shabbos. So the Gemara had said, is it not so that Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan Baruch says, when it comes to Pesach, do as little as possible in order to accomplish the goal? So too, by the Omer, he would say the same thing, that do three saw as opposed to five saw, because of the same idea of kol heichod de efsher lo tarchinon. We now pick up the text of today's shiur, second line from the bottom on Samach Gimel Amid Beis. Mimai, the Gemara questions this parallel and shows how each one of these tanoim said their halachas only in their own locale, so to speak, but would not agree one with the other with regard to the other's topic. Dilma, ad kan lo komar Rabbi Shmuel. We're going to notice this use of a squiggle underline each time the Gemara says, maybe up till this point, each one said his point only here. And the diamonds will be used to emphasize the expressions hocha and hosam, references to here and there, references to the respective topics. So here the Gemara says, Ad kan lo ka'amar Rabbi Shmuel. It could be that up till this point, Rabbi Shmuel said what he said, hocha, in the case of the Omer, Ela deleko bizayon kachim. There is no other consideration that of the disparagement of sacrifices. Here there was just an issue of amount to harvest, and Rabbi Shmuel said, you can accomplish your goal with three sa'ah of raw material, of raw grain, and from that derive your isaron of flour, and therefore there's no need to do more. Avol hasam, in the case of the Korban Pesach, di'ika bizoyon kachim, there is an issue of a partially mufshat, partially of skinned animal. Leaving an animal partially skinned until later, until after Shabbos, when you would finish off the job, that is a bizayon, a disparagement of the sacrifice. Once again, if one has some good imagination, just imagine this animal lying a number of hours, part skinned and part not. It's not a pleasant sight. That would be a bizayon kachim. So Amor, I would say, kirabonon svira lei, that Rebbe Yishmael of our Mishnah would agree with the Rabbonon in the Mishnah concerning the Korban Pesach, which would say, you can skin the whole thing on Shabbos. Inami, also, from the other one's standpoint. Now let's focus on Rebbe Yishmael ben Rabbi Yochanan Broka, who spoke about the partial skinning of the Korban Pesach and what his opinion would be with regard to the Omer. Ad kan, lokom Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yochanan Broka hasam, he said his din over there by Pesach, namely partial skinning, is enough. Elodis avid le tzorech gavoya v'lo tzorech achuli Shabbos. The tzorech gavoya, namely the offering of the innards, can be accomplished through the partial skinning, and there's no need to violate Shabbos anymore. Avol hocha, but here in the case of the Omer, delo is avid le tzorech gavoa, v'tzorech la'achule Shabbos. In the case of harvesting less than five sa'a, it may be argued that you're not accomplishing tzorech gavoa. Namely, through the harvesting of five sa'a, you'll get a better quality final product, which is eventually offered on the Mizbeach. And as a result of that, you need to violate Shabbos to accomplish the basic goal of Tzorech Gavoa. Emo Kirabonon Svirole. I might argue that Rabbi Yishmael Benoshi, Rabbi Yochanan Broka of Pesach fame, would agree with the Rabbonon over here that say, and now here we have to emphasize, that they say as a rule that no distinction is to be made between Shabbos and Chol. That whatever it takes to get your final product that you would do during the weekday, do the same thing on Shabbos. Now, what one has to be careful about here is that when the Gemara says, Emo kirabonon svirle, don't make the mistake by suggesting the Rabbonon and take it literally. When you look at the Mishnah, we notice the Rabbonon hold, in the case of Omer, all you have to do is three saw. Because what the principle of the Rabbonon is that whatever it takes, do. Namely, make no distinction. And if you happen to be of the opinion that you really need five saw to get the best product, which could be, which is a legitimate opinion, so the Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan Broka would say, do all five saw. And when the Gemara says, like the Rabbanan, it means to the extent that, not regarding amount, but regard to the principle, just like the Rabbanan make no distinction between Shabbos and Chol, so too, I would make no distinction between Shabbos and Chol. And if my feeling is that you can get a superior quality product by harvesting five saw, do that as well on Shabbos. That brings us to stage two of the Gemara, Elo Omar Rabba. This would be a second attempt on the part of Rabba to make a parallel. When we get eventually to the third stage there, Rav Ashi will be the speaker. Elo Omar Rabba, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKoyanim, Omru Dovor Echad. Disnan. These two opinions actually appeared in our Mishnah with regard to the Omer. If you have the Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis accessible, you'll notice that in our Mishnah we had placed a slash at the second line of the Mishnah, which opened up this perek. We also had broken down the Mishnah into two parts, Roman numeral 1 and Roman numeral number 2, indicating that there was two sections of the Mishnah dealing with two different topics, albeit under the heading of Omer. So it could be that Rabbi Shmuel, who was in the Reisha, can be paralleled with Rabbi Haninos Gan HaKonim, who was in the second section of the Mishnah. Well, we know what Rabbi Shmuel said. He mentioned on Shabbos, do three saw instead of five that you would do during the weekday. Because of this principle of kol hecha de'efsher lo tarchinan, wherever you can get away with less, do less when it comes to Shabbos. Well, and what about Rabbi Haninos Gan HaKohanim? So, the Gemara says, and quotes his opinion, notice before we go on, we also have on stage 2, Omru Davar Echad is double underline. That's part of our series markings. At each stage, we're trying to say these two Tanaic opinions would say the same thing. So, Disnan, we now have a quote, you can see in the frame, a quote from our Mishnah, Rabbi Haninos Gan HaKohanim Oimer. When it comes to the Omer being brought on Shabbos, a single person goes out to the fields and harvests with one knife and one box. When it comes to a weekday, three people will be employed, using three boxes and three knives, three sickles for cutting the grains. The Chachamim omrim echad Shabbos veechad chol, b'sholosh kupos u'b'sholosh maglos. The Chachamim saying no distinction between Shabbos and chol. And the Gemara now explains. Milo ko'omar Rabbi Haninos Gan HaKohanim Hosam Kevon de'efshelo tarchinon. Is it not so that over there, in the case of Ktziras HaOmer, Rabbi Haninos Gan HaKohanim said, when it comes to Ktzir on Shabbos, you do it with one. Since you can accomplish your goal with one person, we don't matriach three people to do it. Ha'cha nami. So too, with regard to the Reisha, when it comes to amount being harvest, the Reisha, the beginning of the Mishnah, Kevon de Efsher, since it's possible to achieve your Isorim with three Sa'ah, lo tarchinon, we don't expend efforts to harvest five Sa'ah. So we're suggesting that Rabbi Haninos Gan HaKohanim would agree with Rabbi Shmuel regarding amount to be harvested as well. Mimai, who says? Dilma, and once again the Gemara will refute or reject this parallel. And you'll notice the squiggle underlines at each point, focusing on each respective opinion. Dilma ad kan lo ka'amar Rabbi Shmuel hacha. It could be that Rabbi Shmuel, who limited to three saw on Shabbos, el dileka persume milsa. Do three saw as opposed to five, because it's not going to make any difference with regard to public knowledge of what's taking place if you do three as opposed to five. So do less, do three, it is Shabbos. Aval hasam, but when it comes to the maisik tzira, the action of harvest, the ika pirsume milsa, where there's this factor of creating a public awareness. Now, we should point out that there is an issue that we haven't explained yet, but now it's appropriate. Throughout Jewish history, there have always been groups of people that challenged the rabbinic authority. That which we see today, all kinds of break-off groups of Jews that challenge and disparage rabbinic authority, let's make it very clear here and now that this is nothing new. This phenomenon goes all the way back, one may argue, at least as far back as Maimon Har Sinai, where Moshe Rabbeinu, the receiver of the Torah, himself experienced challenges left and right, prominent amongst which were the challenge of Korach and his community, which actually numbered some very significant and prominent individuals in their own right. We found the Meraglim story challenging the divine plan, and down through the ages, all through ages where we had Tzedukim and Karoyim and all kinds of skeptics, generation after generation, and each one of those groups makes a lot of noise for the time being, and then just disappears. And every generation they take on a new banner cry, a new rally, a new new slogans and what have you. But the Torah, the oral tradition, the Torah Shebaal Peh, continues with full vigor and lasts through the storms of change throughout history. So in one of those periods of time, there were people called Baitusim. Without getting into the extensive historical background and identification of that particular group, but the Baitusim had their own take on the timing of the Hakrovas HaOmer. The Pasuk says, U'mimochas HaShabbos. They took to a literal reading of the Torah. Mochas HaShabbos, they felt, meant on the day after Saturday. Shabbos, them taking to mean Shabbos, the seventh day of the week. The day after that, we would call Sunday. So in their opinion, the Omer was brought, since the date of the Omer that's featured in the Torah is Mimochas HaShabbos, is on what they claim to be a Sunday. So it came out the Sunday of Pesach, whenever Pesach, which is a week-long holiday, the Sunday of Pesach, they would claim that the Omer is to be harvested and offered. We know through oral tradition, the communication of the Torah and its pshat, the explanation of the written law, of the written Torah, is understood, according to our belief and tradition, only through the mechanism known as Torah Shebaal Peh. Through Torah Shebaal Peh, we know that Mimochas HaShabbos does not mean the day after Saturday, but the term Shabbos refers also to the first day of the holiday. Shabbos being an expression meaning Lishbos, is to cease from melochav, cease from creative activity. The Yom Tov as well, the first day of the holiday, is also a form of Shabbos. So when it says in Mimochas HaShabbos, Shabbos, the first day of Pesach, Shabbos, a term used for the first day of Pesach, is the 15th of Nisan. Mimochas HaShabbos means the 16th of Nisan. So Mimochas HaShabbos, as opposed to a day of the week, is rather a date on the calendar, the 16th of Nisan. Now, in order to make this well known, in order to serve as a disputation, a refutation of the skeptics of the Baitusim, there was this opinion that says, you know what, when you go out to harvest, go out with a group of people, make a public showing. So at this point in the Gemara, it may be that Rabbi Shmuel, when it comes to amount to be harvested, the physical amount to be harvested, do 3 saw instead of 5. However, when it comes to the process of harvesting, do that with a public public uproar. Do it in such a way that we will promulgate and pronounce that the right way to do things is on the 16th of Nisan, and that can be accomplished by having a group of people going out and doing it. That's what this idea of Pirsume Milsa is referring to. So the Gemara says, and we pick up where we left off, it could be that Aval Hossam, where you see the diamond, it says, Di'ika Pirsume Milsa, Ema Kirabonon Svira Lei. Maybe Rabbi Yishmael from the Reisha would agree with the Rabbonon in the second stage of the Mishnah, under the Roman numeral 2 heading of the Mishnah, like the Rabbonon that said, Echad Shabbos Echad Chol, do it with 3 people. So that Rabbi Yishmael of the Reisha may in fact not agree with Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim of the Seifa. Inami, and likewise, Ad Kan Lo Kamar Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim, it may be that he says what he says with regard to amount of people with regard to the harvest, namely on Shabbos, do it with 1. Hasam over there, the I Bechad, I Beshlosha, whether it's 1 or 3, Tzorech Gavoya Misabed Kilchoso, you're accomplishing your divine requirement with 1, just as could be accomplished with three. So since it's Shabbos, do it with one. With one, you'll also accomplish your tzerech gavoya. Aval hocha, when it comes to the issue of amount to be harvested, the lo is avid ki ilchaso tzerech gavoya. When you're not achieving the best product, when harvesting just three saw, emo kerabonon svirolei. Maybe Rabbi Hanina Sgan HaKoyanim would agree with the Rabbonon when it comes to amount of harvest that state make no distinction between Shabbos and Chol. And if in order to achieve a better product you need to harvest more, even if it's Shabbos. Just like you wouldn't make any considerations if it were a weekday. You would do as much as you need to do. So we see that the parallel that we tried to draw at stage two, namely that Rabba tried to draw between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Hanina, that is not necessarily so. Elo Omar Ravashi, now a third attempt to draw a parallel between two Tanaic opinions as follows. Rabbi Shmuel, Elo Omar Ravashi, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Omru Dover Echad. Maybe we can parallel Rabbi Shmuel from the ratio of our Mishnah, who said on Shabbos do just three saw, with Rabbi Yossi, which we will see very shortly. So Dilma, as we say here, maybe Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Omru, Dover, Echad. Desnan, the topic that we're about to learn has to do with witnesses going out at the beginning of a month to see the new phase of the moon. And with witnesses seeing the new phase of the moon, they would report back to the Beis Din, to the court, and the court would make a declaration that it's now the first of the month. Is there any, what happens if the first of the month, if this sighting takes place on Shabbos? And let us say that in order to report back to the Beis Din, if they made a sighting on Shabbos, they would involve some form of Shabbos violation in order to get to the Beis Din to report back. This Shabbos violation could involve things like going beyond the tchum, traveling too long a distance, which ordinarily on Shabbos is not allowed. What happens if the witnesses actually experience the new phase on Shabbos? Are they allowed? What happens if it's plainly visible to everybody and you don't really need the witnesses? So these topics will be touched on the following source that you can see is in a frame, as we do in all of our Gemara markings, framing off Tanaic sources. So the source featuring Rabbi Yossi says, Disnan, Bein shenira be'olil, whether the new phase of the moon is seen, be'olil means visible to all. Olil is plainly or clearly visible. Bein shelo nira be'olil, or if it's not, wasn't such a clear day and that not everyone necessarily saw it. In either case, mechalav as a Shabbos. The Tanakama, the first opinion, makes no distinction between having it seen, plainly seen and clearly visible to all versus not so clearly visible. There is a heter for Chilul Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi Omer, im nira ba'olil, ein mechal za Shabbos. If it's plainly visible to all, so we're not going to have Shabbos violated by these witnesses to report back to the court. So the Gemara points out, mi lo omar Rabbi Yossi hosam, is it not so that Rabbi Yossi stated over there in the case that it was plainly visible, came from the Efshir Lo Tarchinon, since it's possible to accomplish knowledge on the part of the Beis Din without these witnesses extending themselves, because it's Shabbos, Hochanami, so too when it comes to quantity of grains, came into Efshir, since it's possible to accomplish the final product by harvesting three saw of raw material, Lo Tarchinon, we wouldn't extend ourselves, Rabbi Yossi would supposedly agree, we wouldn't extend ourselves to harvest any more. So at this point, Rav Ashi states his case. Let us parallel Rabbi Yossi with regard to Kiddush HaChodesh, the case of it being seen be'olil, with Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah. And once again, the Gemara rejects. Mimai, Dilmat Kanok Rabbi Shmuel, Hocha, maybe Rabbi Shmuel said what he said only over here, that we're not Matshriach, that's with regard to amount of Sa'irim, Deleko, Nimtse Sata Machshim Nosidlovoi. We don't have any other consideration. We read this very, very quickly. We put it also in a phrase marking. Nimtseis ata machshiv nosud lavos. Let's explain that. Imagine we have witnesses that saw the new moon, and it was a very clear day. Imagine then we take the opinion that say, listen, if it was a very clear day, don't bother coming. The next time around that these witnesses have experience of sighting, and it comes out, let's say, on Shabbos, they'll say, hey, last time we weren't needed. Maybe this time also, let's not bother. We're not needed. But on that subsequent occasion, the sighting may not have been so clear, and they really were needed. But since last time we rejected them, we rejected them in the sense we don't need you, they became discouraged. That's what this concept is of nimseis ato machshilon. You come out causing them to stumble, so to speak, le'asid lavo, in the future. So it could be that Rabbi Shmuel says, listen, we'll reduce the amount of efforts. That's in a case where the only consideration is amount of effort that needs to be extended. And since you can accomplish your ends with three saw, don't do more. However, in the case of the testimony, if in a case where it's near of Olil, you nevertheless tell them, don't bother going. On the next occasion, when it's not so near of Olil, it's not so clearly visible, they also won't go. And with that, as the Gemara goes on to say, Avol Hasam, but in that case, with regard to Kiddush HaChodesh, Dinim says ato machshilu nosu lovo, by not encouraging them to go under the circumstances of Nira Ba'olil, you're going to actually discourage them in the future from going when they really are necessary. Emo k'rabbonan svirolei. Maybe our Rabbi Shmuel would agree with the Rabbonan over there who argue with Rabbi Yossi that say, listen, even if the moon was clearly visible, nevertheless, mechalin es ha-Shabbos. They can violate Shabbos in order to communicate their testimony to the court. Inami, and also, ad kan of Rabbi Yossi Hossam, it could be that Rabbi Yossi said what he did only over there with regard to Kiddush HaChodesh, in the case of it being clearly visible. Elo deleko tzorech gavoa. There is no divine requirement. Velo nitno Shabbos lichos. And there's no other grounds for Shabbos to be overruled, to be superseded. Because the moon was clearly visible. There's no other basis for overruling or superseding Shabbos. Aval hocha, when it comes to the oimer, deiko tzorech gavoa. There is this consideration that you'll get a better product if you harvest five. Venitno Shabbos lichos. And there is a basic allowance of Shabbos to be violated with regard to the three saw. No one argues that with regard to the three saw, you're allowed to violate Shabbos. So, as Rashi says, since Shabbos has been opened, so to speak, it's been pushed off with regard to the three saw, we can have it pushed off or superseded with regard to the five saw. After all, you will be accomplishing Tzorech Gavoa in a better fashion that way. So, Emo Kerabonon Svirole. Maybe Rabbi Yossi of Kiddush HaChodesh would agree with the Rabbanon by the Oimer that says, make no distinction between weekday and Shabbos, and whatever it takes, go ahead and do it, without considering the Kol Hecha De'efshir Lo Tarchinon factor. So, at this point, the parallel that Rav Ashi tried to draw between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi also falls away. You can see that we have a slash mark in our Gemara. Before going on, just to summarize what the thrust of the last section of Gemara was, there were three attempts, as you can see with the triangles, to parallel Rabbi Yishmael with some other Tana, hoping to see them both agreeing on principle with regard to Shabbos, Kol Hecha De'efshir Lo Tarchinon. However, each one of these attempts fell away by the Gemara showing that there is lack of parallel between the two topics that were being featured at each stage. As we turn to the continuation of the Gemara, we have a topic heading that accompanies this, a topic heading with a structural note. Under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we have a volcano form featured, trapezoid. They represent Shnei Psokim, two legal rulings, Shel Rabbah, two Piske Halacha of Rabbah, Shenirim Soisrin. They seem to be contradictory. Be'inyin Shochat Shnei Chatos Shel Tzibur, regarding a case of someone having slaughtered two public sin offerings on Shabbos, V'eino Tzorech Elo Achas, and he needs only one. In other words, when he came to slaughter the second one, it seems to be unnecessary. The Gemara will fill in quite a bit more by way of detail, but as far as giving a flavor of what the Gemara is discussing, this serves as our topic heading. So now let's turn to the Gemara. Itmar, Shochat Shtei Chatoi Shel Tzibur. V'eino Tzorech Elo Achas. He slaughtered two sin offerings that were of a public nature. It could be pointed out that a public sin offering is a type of korban that is brought on Shabbos. However, they needed only one, and he went ahead and slaughtered a second one. Omar Rabba V'itemo Rav Ashi. Rabba appears in a volcano form, because we're going to want to contrast this with the next Rabba comment 2 lines from now. Rav Ashi's name is dashed, underlined. There will be significance to that a little bit later in the stage in which the Gemara offers answers. So the Rabba says, Chayov al Hashnia upoter al Harishoina. The dotted underline here is going to be important for us later when we want to create to raise the contradiction. We'll see how this dot underline works. So he says, he rules that there is a violation, and therefore chiyuv al hashnia. He's considered in violation with regard to the action of slaughtering the second unnecessary animal. Rashi says a few lines up from here, Chayav al-Hashniyah Chatas. He's Chayav for this, a sin offering for his violating Shabbos. The Shoigeku, he did this act of slaughtering in a state of unintentional state. Kosovor, he thought, Mutter l'shochton b'Shabbos, Hoyo v'shel tzibur hu, since it's a public offering, and it's therefore allowed in general to slaughter public offerings on Shabbos, V'ta'a, But he made a mistake when he came to the second animal. The Kiva de Shochat Rishon, once he slaughtered the first one, Su Lo Chosi Hai Litzibor, the second one is no longer fit for the Tzibor. So there's no basis, there's no allowance, there's no heter for shechting it. Now, the Gemara goes on to show to what extent Rabbah's Psak is stated. And he says, V'afilu Niskaper Loi B'shnia. Even if ultimately he achieves his kapora, the atonement, or the public achieves their atonement through that second animal. Now, you'll ask, but didn't they slaughter the first animal? The answer is yes, they did. They slaughtered the first animal. Atonement is achieved through the sprinkling of the blood. But after they slaughtered the first animal, there was then a slaughtering of the second animal. At that very point, we said it wasn't necessary to slaughter it. However, the blood of the first animal spilled out. And they said, hey, well, we don't have the first animal blood anymore to use for Zrika, for the sprinkling and a kapora. So they used the second blood, the blood of that second animal. So that even though they ended up at the end of the day using it as their korban, it doesn't help, because we look at the point of slaughtering, and at the point of the slaughtering of the second one, the blood of the first one was still available. Therefore, the slaughtering action of the second one was a problem. And a further point, V'afilu nimtseis rishoina klusha. Even if prior to the slaughtering, even if the first animal is found to be kusha, and Rashi points out, even if prior to the slaughtering of the second animal, and this is a very important point, prior to the slaughtering of the second animal, the first animal was seen to be kusha, was seemed to be of a poor quality. Klusha is a term meaning weak or extremely lean, something that's not of superior quality as far as sacrifices are concerned. And in general, when it comes to sacrifices, Rashi quotes a pasuk from Malachi, Hakriveu no lefochasecha, that one offers to the leader, the choicest one, so that even in a case where the first one was found to be klusha before the slaughtering of the second one, and one may have argued, hey, you know, this isn't such a great korban, let's bring a second one because the second one is of a better or superior quality, and with that I accomplish hakriveu no lefchasecha. Nevertheless, Rabba says, the slaughtering of the second one, even though they may have felt that they had a good reason to slaughter it, nevertheless is in violation of Shabbos. At this point, the Gemara introduces the problem. Umi Omar Rabba Hochi. Does Rabba really say that? The Ho Omar Rabba. Hoyu Lefon of Shtei Chatois. Once again, two, he had in front of him, there were two, it was a Shabbos, and he had two public Chatos. Public Shel Tzibur. Achas Shmeino Vachas Chusha. One fat and one lean. And he needs only one. Shochat Shmeino Vachas Shochat Chusha Chayav. If he slaughters first the fat one, the robust one, and then he slaughters the second one, chayav, he is in violation. There was no need for that second slaughter. He had already slaughtered the choice animal. And now we draw our attention to case two. Klusha v'yachar kach shmeina, if he slaughtered the lean animal, and then slaughtered the robust animal, putter, he is exempt. V'lo oid. Not only that, but in a case that he had slaughtered a lean animal, we would tell him, go find a better one and slaughter it on Shabbos. What do we see from this ruling of Rabba? That if there is a consideration of a better quality animal, then by all means, do it. You're allowed to do it. Let's go over the Gemara, focusing strictly on our markings. In the first psak of Rabba, we used a diagonal dashed underline on the case where it says Nimtzeis Rishona Klusha. That's a case of first one being lean, and the second one being more robust. Notice in that first ruling of Rabba, we also had a dotted underline where it said Chayav al Hashnia, that one is in violation for the slaughtering of the second one, even though it was robust. In the second ruling of Rabba, focus on the markings. We see the case of Klusha, the lean animal being slaughtered first, and then he went and slaughtered a second robust animal, we see dot underline putter. So just by looking at the markings, you can see in the first ruling we had Rishona Klusha Chayav al Hashnia. In the second ruling we have where the first one is Klusha, he's putter on the Shnia. That's a contradiction. How to get out of this? So the Gemara has two possibilities. One possibility is Sami Klusha Mikomaisa. Look at the little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. It points, or it's to be parallel with the arrow, just three lines up, where it featured the Klusha, where the first one was Klusha. So the Gemara is saying, you know, delete. Press the delete button, so to speak, with regard to Rishona Klusha under the first Rabba ruling. So that it comes out that if the first one was, in fact, lean, then there is no guilt if one slaughters a second more robust animal. Another approach the Gemara takes, V'boy Yisema, Hahi Rebbe Ami Omra. The first ruling was not stated by Rabba at all. It was Rebbe Ami Now, you may recall that we said Rabbi Ami's name had been dashed, underlined. It was for this purpose, so that when the Gemara here refers to Rabbi Ami, you can spot it more clearly. And therefore, Rabbi Ami has a more strict approach to the slaughtering of the second animal, Rabba being represented only in the second psak, and him being more lenient. Amar le Ravina the Ravashi. Ravina asks, Nimseis harishoina kusha bivnei me'ayim, mahu. Up till now, we saw Rabba ruling leniently with regard to first one being lean. You can go ahead and slaughter a second animal. What happens in a case where the first one turns out to be lean, but you discover that only after you slaughtered a second animal? Once again, let's emphasize that point. The first one was found to be lean, but only after you slaughtered the second animal. At the point you slaughtered the second animal, it wasn't clear that the first animal was in fact of any less quality. So what should we emphasize? Should we emphasize intent at that time of action, or emphasize final results? Let's glance at the outside margin to note our Nosei Mivneh heading that accompanies this piece of Gemara. We first of all feature a house marking that will appear in the Gemara with a Roman numeral 1 and 2. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you may glance over and notice there's a little house with a 1 and a few lines later with a 2. The line at which that 2 is positioned, toward the beginning of line, there's an Ika di Amri expression. That represents a second version. So, looking back at our note, the house is explained as Shnei Lishonos, two versions, B'tshuvas Rav Ashi, with regard to Rav Ashi's response, B'mikre Shel, regarding an incident or a case of Shchitas Chatos Sheni, Lifnei Shenimseis Rishonu Klush B'vinayim, where a second unnecessary, or seemingly unnecessary, animal was slaughtered, prior to your discovering that the first animal, in fact, is kusha with regard to its innards. The afalpi, the b'mikre acher, the rishayna kusha mutar lahavichat hashniya, even though under the other circumstance, the previous circumstance, where the first one is found, is seen to be kusha, you're allowed to bring a second animal and slaughter it. B'nidon didan, in our current case, lo yadu shal rishayna kusha ad la'achar sheshachtu hashniya. It wasn't known that the first one was kusha until after they slaughtered the second animal. Now the question arises, what do we emphasize? Bosar machshava, and the result of that, if you go according to intent, well, intent in the slaughtering of the second one was not an attempt to slaughter a more robust animal, so therefore v'chayav, or boser maisa, or do you go according to the results, the action and results, and that would result in upoter, and that would be a reason for exemption, because in the final picture, you discover that the first one, in fact, was klusha, and as we know, when first one is klusha, that does give license to the slaughtering of a second animal. And just to review, but we should just don't forget that in this case, at the point of slaughtering the second animal, it was not known that the first one was kusha. So let's turn back to the Gemara. The question we already read. Or let's read it again anyway. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. Nimseis harishonu kusha bivnei me'ayim. The first one was found to be kusha with regard to its innards. Apparently from the outside it looked like a robust animal, but when they opened it up, and they opened it up after they shechted the second animal, when they opened it up they found that the innards were very lean, and the innards are that which are offered on the Mizbeach. Mahu, what is the way to go? How do you rule in this case? Do we go according to his mindset at the time of the slaughtering of the second animal, and this man forbidden intents, meaning he intended to slaughter the second animal. And that was a wrongful intent. A second, as we said, unnecessary animal. Oy dilma, boser myself azlinan. Or do we go according to the results? And in this case, the results would seemingly justify the slaughtering of that second animal, because the first animal was discovered to be kusha, b'vnei me'ah. Omar lei, Rav Ashi answers, and notice we have our house. This is the first version of Rav Ashi's response. He says, Lav hainu de rabo ve rava. Is this not the same as a case that rabo and rava would agree, would both agree that he is guilty? De itmar. And now we have the background for this rabo and rava. De itmar, shoma shetova tinok bayam. Person heard that a child drowned at sea. Uporas mitsuda. And he spread out, or he set up a trap or nets. So you have a person who heard that a child drowned, and he set out nets. Now, what was his reason for setting out the nets? So there are two possibilities. Lahalois dogim, vehelo dogim, chayav. If he set out nets in order to trap fish, and he trapped fish, so he's in violation of Shabbos. On Shabbos, there's a prohibition of fishing, of trapping animals. Number two, if he nevertheless had an intention, lahalois dogim. His intention was to catch fish. Vehelo dogim vetinok, and he ended up hauling up not only fish but the child as well. Rava merchayov, v'rabo mepoter. Rava says he is nevertheless guilty, and Rabo says he is innocent. V'ad kan, Rabo lo kopotar. And up till now, Rabbah suggests exemption, Elokim the Shoma, since he had heard of the child's drowning, there was awareness before action of the child's needing to be saved. Amrinon nami daite atinok. We can say that he had in mind the child also, even though we presented situation two where the child was found, was caught in the nets. With the person's intent of trapping fish, nevertheless, he had heard about the child. Maybe he had in mind saving the child as well. And that, of course, would be quite allowed on Shabbos. Avol loy shama lo. But if there was no report of child drowning, even Rabba, who was, in the case of the nets, he was lenient, even Rabba would agree that there is guilt. So that Rabba and Rava, in a case that there was no prior awareness, they don't look at final results, they look at simply intent, at time of action. So in the case of the Nimseis Rishonah Klusha B'nei Me'ah, there was no knowledge of Kusha before the action of the second slaughtering. So that would be the case of, parallel to the case of Lo Shama, no awareness before action. And in other words, the legitimatizing factor becomes apparent only after the action. Under such circumstances, Rava and Rabba would agree that there is guilt. The Iko Diamri. Now, a second version of Rav Ashi's response to Ravina's question of Nimsei Sarishan Klush B'Meayim. Omar Lei, Rav Ashi says, he says, oh, your question, Lav Hainu Pluktayu de Rabba Varava, isn't the response to your question based on a controversy between Rabba and Rava? In the first version, we said that Ravina's question could be answered by a unanimity of between Rabba and Rava. In this version, Ravina's question would be answered by a controversy between Rabba and Rava. the Itmar, and here we present the case, Shoma Shetova Tinok Bayam. Person heard on Shabbos that a child had drowned. Uporas Mitsuda, and he set out his nets. Case 1, Lehalois Dogim, Vehelo Dogim Chayov. His intention was to simply catch fish, and all he did was catch fish. So he's guilty. Lehalois Dogim, Vehelo Tinok Vidogim. The second case is he also had the intention of catching fish, but he also successfully caught the child as well. Rabo Omar Potter, Verob Omar Chayov. Rabo says he is exempt, and Rashi points out he is exempt even if he had not heard of the child drowning. The Gemara goes over these shitas. Rabo Omar Potter, Rabo says he is exempt. Zeal, Bosser, myself. All you focus on is the result. And the result is the child was caught. And that strengthens Rashi's explanation. If you say, you look at results, even if there was no awareness of child drowning, and now paralleling that over to our case, by the Chushu B'nei Ma'ayim, even if there was no awareness at the time of action concerning the fact that the first one was Chusha, nevertheless, there's exemption when it comes to the second. When it comes to, in the case of the slaughtering, the second animal being slaughtered. Because at the end of the day, the first one was found to be Chusha. Just like Rabba says, at the end of the day, the child was caught in the nets. Rava Omar Chayov, Zeal, Boser, Machshav Oso. Rava says that even though the child was caught in the nets, when the guy spread out the nets, he did it, as we saw in the Gemara, simply la'alos dogim. His intention was simply catching the fish, even though there was a nice result at the end. That doesn't change the halacha of guilt, as far as Rava is concerned. Likewise, Rava, in the case of the Nimsa Chusha Be'man, would say, very nice, at the end of the day, there was good reason to have shechted the second animal, but at the time of the action, there was no knowledge of any need, and therefore his machshava was a machshava of iser, and therefore there would be guilt. Omar Rava. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a nosei heading in the in our version of the Gemara that may be appearing on your screen. You'll notice that the topic heading is found, in this case, because of lack of space, on the inside margin. We like to place the topic headings as close to possible as the point in the Gemara in which they appear. In this case, our outside note on the previous sugya was rather extensive, hence, because of space considerations, we have this on the inside margin. So the nosei that you see, it says, Choyle she'omduhu legrogeres achas. A person was very ill, and the doctors evaluated or estimated that in order for him to survive, you have to harvest a singular fig, a singular dried fig for him. V'hevilu anoshim rabim kol echad grogeres achas. And a whole bunch of people came, each one running in with their one grogeres that they had cut off a tree on Shabbos to save this person. So at the end of the day, many more figs came in than were needed, and they were all acquired through Shabbos violation. Each individual, though, did that which was the required amount to save the person, which, of course, in saving a person on Shabbos is quite allowed to do whatever is necessary. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rava, Chole she'omdu ligrogeres achas. A person who was ill, Chole was ill, that the doctors evaluated, that omdu is an evaluation, that in order for him to live, one grogeres would be sufficient. The rotsu ran. Rotsu means they ran. Asora b'nei adam. 10 people ran. V'viu asora grogeres v'asachas. They came and brought in one shot 10 figs, each one bringing in one. Pturim. They are exempt. Afilu bazeh acharzeh, even if they come in one after the other. Rashi explains, because when it comes to an attempt to save life, we say anyone who hustles in order to save a life is praiseworthy. So these people were all hustling to the best of their abilities to save someone's life. Afilu, the Gemara goes on to say, Kidam v'hivri borishona. Even if after eating the first one he already was healthy, and people came in after he became healthy with their figs, Nevertheless, they had an intention of saving the person. Boy, Rava. In fact, this first statement of Rava really serves as a backdrop for Rava's question. Rava asks, Chayla shandu l'shtei grogros, a person who was deathly ill, who was evaluated as needing two figs in order to survive. V'yesh shtei grogros b'shtei uktsin. There are two figs that are attached separately on two separate stems. V'shalosh b'oketz echad. And in another spot on the tree, there were three figs attached to one stem. Hey, minayu maisinon. Which of these choices should be taken advantage of? He needs two. So is it better to take the two, even though it involves an extra Shabbos action, Shabbos violation action? Or should he take the three from one stem, where he's bringing in more than is necessary, but with less Shabbos violation? The Gemara presents the two possibilities. Shtayim maisinon dechazulei. Are they to bring in the two figs from the two separate stems, because that's what he needs? Oidilmo shalosh maisinon dekamimita ktira. Or does he bring in three, because the choice of bringing in the three actually involves less Shabbos violation? In this case, the violation of the Shabbos through the Moloch of Ketzira. The Gemara answers, Pshita, the answer is obvious, Shalosh Maisinon, it's simple that he brings in the three. Of course, this question is brought with the our Mishnah as the backdrop. And the Gemara points out, the Ad Kan Lokum Rabbi Shmuel Hasam, Rabbi Shmuel in our Mishnah said what he did, in other words, to reduce amount being harvest, Elo Dechimimit Ve'Alchila Kamimit Ksira. In the case of the Mishnah, where you are reducing by way of Achila the final product, that which you'll eat or consume, you're also reducing amount of Shabbos violation. As in other words, the amount of Shabbos violation needed to harvest three saw is less than the amount of Shabbos violation to harvest five saw. Because in harvesting five saw, you're doing more ketzira on the additional two saw. Those additional two saw is additional Shabbos violation. Aval hacha. But in this case, dechi ka mimayet beachila ka mafsha ktsira. In this case, if you are taking the fewer amount, the lesser amount, the two grogros, you're actually increasing, mafsha is increasing the amount of Shabbos violation. Vadai shalosh maisinon. You obviously, most certainly, bring the three figs that involves less Shabbos violation, one act of harvest or of cutting. The Mishnah. Before learning the Mishnah, we glance at the outside margin under our nosei. The topic heading is Lechatchila Yesh Lohavi Minchas Oimer Shtealechem Mimokom Korov Lushalayim. Optimally, one should bring the grains needed for the Omer offering and the Shtehalechem offering from a place, from grains growing close to Yerushalayim, as close as possible to the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah. Mitzvah Sa'oimer Lohavi Min HaKorov. The best way of accomplishing the Omer Mitzvah is to bring from those grains near Yerushalayim. Lo Biker HaKorov Yerushalayim Mevien Oisoi Mikol Mokoim. If those that were closest to Yerushalayim were not ripe yet, they weren't ready yet, so bring them from any place. Maisa Shebo HaOimer Migagos Tzrifin Ushtealechem Mibikas Ein Socher. Historically, it actually happened that they brought the Omer from a faraway place, from a place named Gagos Tzrifin, and the Shtealechem they brought from a faraway place named Bikas Ein Socher. It may be pointed out, based on a Gemara that we learned a number of Dapim ago, that when we say they come from Mikol Makom, there is reason to believe that they should come from Eretz Yisrael. Even if the point of Eretz Yisrael happens to be far away, nevertheless, there's an expectation that the Omer and the Shtei Alechem come from grains grown in Eretz Yisrael. This is as opposed to standard menachos, which can come from grains that are imported as well. The Gemara asks, "My time, why is there this necessity or expectation of bringing from near Yerushalayim?" So one answer is Iboy Esema Mishum Carmel. The pasuk in describing the grains for the Omer uses the word Carmel, and the word Carmel is understood to be an abbreviated expression, a contraction. And the Rashi says Carmel Takriv. That's a quote from the pasuk. The word Takriv is in the pasuk. And the word Carmel is Rach Umole. The Carmel is made of Chof Resh, and if you switch the Chof with the Resh, you get Rach. Rach means soft, and Mole, full. Shetehe, Rashi explains, Shetehe Tavua, Rako, and Vanillas V'yad. It should be, the grain should be soft, not too dried out, and you could actually, Nimleos V'yad, is you can extract the kernel from the chaff by hand. The imaisi meirochik, if you bring grains from far away, noshif lo zika, the winds will blow in the course of traveling with the grains. They'll be exposed to the elements, umiskashe baderech, and they'll become hardened, dried out, and hardened. So, turning back to the Gemara, the reason we want it close is we want it to be fresh and soft, and not hard and dried out. That's because of Carmel that it says in the pasuk. V'boy Seima, another explanation is Mishum de'ein mavirin al ha-mitzvahs, that where you have an opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah nearby, you don't skip over that which is nearby in order to accomplish the mitzvah through that which is far away. Ein mavirin, we don't skip over opportunities or locations, proximities, in order to accomplish the mitzvah. Do it as soon or as nearby as possible. Maisa Shabo Omer Migagoy Srifin. Before going on in the Gemara, of course, we'll in the Gemara you notice a large framed section. On the outside margin under our Nose heading, you see we've written Mokor, a source, Shemitayer, that explains or describes Hazman, a point in history, Shaboy Ravu Shnei Mishpochei Shalbeis Chashmonoi. There was feuding between two families that were descendants from the house of Chashmonoi. These were two Kohen houses that came from the Chashmonoi dynasty. Shenitan le'echad me'em etzah, to one of these families, bad advice, was given lehafsik hakrovas hatomid, that they should stop enabling the daily korban tomid, the daily sacrifice, from being offered, and this would enable them kedei lenatzech hasheni, by the stopping of the tomid offering. The second we'll see, the outside family will be able to defeat the people, the family inside the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, we'll see in the Gemara that in merit of the family that was inside the Beis HaMikdash, controlling the Beis HaMikdash, in the merit of their offering the daily sacrifice, the tomid, shel shachar, tomid shel ben abayim, that enabled them to maintain their control and position. So advice was given to thwart or to stop, to halt the offering of the daily sacrifice in order for a chance to arise for the outside family to take over. Uba'isa peregzman, in that time of history, lo motzu tvua sofi Yerushalayim, because of the warring that was taking place, the area around Yerushalayim had been destroyed, and hence fields were barren, and the issue of where are they going to get their Omer and Shtei Alechem offering arose. Let us see the source now inside. Tanu Rabbanan, Kishitsaru Malchei Beis Chashmonoi Ze Al Ze, when the kings of the Chashmonoi family were warring with one another. Hyrcanus Mibachutz Varstabulus Mifnim. Hyrcanus and Aristobulus are names of families. The Hyrcanus family was outside and the Aristobulus family was inside. Every day the Aristobulus family would lower, using probably a pulley system, coins, money, from the Beis HaMikdash funds. Umalahim Tamidim, and the outside family, the Hurkanis family, would use the money, buy the necessary animals for the Tamid sacrifice, and put the, using the same pulley system apparently, would supply animals, and they would be hauled up the wall into the Beis HaMikdash. Hayashon Zokin Echod, there was some old man, Shoyamakir Chochmas Yevonis, who knew Chochmas Yevonis. Chochmas Yevonis is a form of communication using signs. It could be like sign language that we refer to today. Rashi refers to it as Rimozim, speaking through or communicating through hints or motions. Loaz Lohem Bechochmas Yevonis. So this Zokin gave counsel using this form of communication known as Chochmas Yevonis, Omar Lehem, and he told them, Kolzman Shel Asukin Bavoida, as long as the inner family is involved with the Beis HaMikdash sacrificial procedure, Ein Nimtzorim B'yedchem, you will not be successful. In other words, they have the merit of the Avodas Beis HaMikdash taking place under their control. Lamochar, the next day, Shilshlem Dinrim, the money was lowered, Bakupa through this box, Vehelu Lehen Chazir, and they, instead of the kosher animal, the sheep that's used as the Korban Tomid, they put in a pig. Kevon Shigil Chatzi Choyma, as this animal was being raised, and it reached halfway up the wall, Noat Tziponav B'choyma, it wedged its nails into the wall. V'nizdaza Eretz Yisrael Arba Meos Parsa, and the land of Israel shook. This is an expression; it's hard to give a literal translation to it, but we would say that was a calamitous experience. The land of Israel shook 400 parsa by 400 parsa, which is a measure of distance. But for our purposes, it was a calamity. But Oisashah Amru, at that moment, they ruled, Orur Shigad El Chazir, cursed be one who raises pigs, the Orur Shilame Benoi Chochmas Yevonis, and cursed be the one that teaches his son Chochmas Yevonis. The Al Oisashah, and regarding that time period when these families were feuding with one another, the surroundings of Yerushalayim were in ruins. So regarding that time, Shaninu, we learned that which is taught in our Mishnah. Maisa Shiboimer Migagas Trifin Ushtalechami Bikas Ein Socher. That which was taught in our Mishnah, that an event happened that they needed to bring the Omer from Gagas Trifin, which we pointed out was a far away place, and the Shtalechem from Bikas Ein Socher, which also was a far away place, that took place. This incident took place. The need to bring from these faraway locations took place at this time in history when these families were feuding with one another. As we go on in the Gemara, we use a diamond and numbering 1, 2, and 3, and this is explained in the outside margin, Gimel Maisim, Shebahen, there are three incidents in which in each of them, Shebahen Mordechai Mifanech Dvorim Stumim, Mordechai reveals decodes things that otherwise were encoded or mysterious or unknown. We'll also be using a double underline each time Mordechai speaks up, Omar Luhu Mordechai. As to the identity of this Mordechai in the Gemara, Rashi says Mordechai referred to in the Gemara is the famous Mordechai of Purim fame. Tosfos disagrees. Turning to the Gemara, the first two incidents we may point out really are descriptions of what we saw in the Mishnah. Kimota Omer, when the time for offering the Omer came about, Lo havu yadi mehecho aisi Omer, they didn't know from where to bring the Omer. And we pointed out the areas around Yerushalayim were in desolation. Achrizu, they announced that anyone who knows where there are grains, please inform us. Also, who Harsha, there was a Chirish. A Chirish in this case is a reference to someone who hears but cannot speak, called a mute individual. Oisiv Chada Yoda Aigra, the Chada Yoda Atzrifa. He placed one hand on a roof and the other hand on a on the top of a hut. A tsrifa is a hut. Rashi describes it as a non-flat roof structure. We can refer to as a pointed roof hut. That's a tsrifa. So you have this mute individual making these motions, one hand on a roof and one hand on a hut. Omar luhu Mordechai. Mordechai, who was present, saw this and says, "Mi iko duchto d'shmo gagas tsrifin o tsrifin gagas." Is there a place that happens to have the name gagas tsrifin or tsrifin gagas? Bodku v'ashkechua. They in fact found that there was such a place, so that this mute was in fact telling them that if you go to gagas tsrifin, you will find grains. Kibo asuyas shtei alechem. Shtei alechem is an offering brought on Shavuos. So it's more or less the same time of year, from the 16th of Nisan till Shavuos. You're dealing with a period of just under 7 weeks. It's the period of time that it's a period of 7 weeks, the time during which we count the Omer. We do Sfiras Omer, which is a 49-day period. So that 49 days later, they needed to bring the Shtei Alechem. Technically speaking, maybe a day less, because the Shtei Alechem was brought before, it was baked Erev on the day before. So when they needed to bring the Shtei Alechem, lo havu yadi mehecha lasu, they didn't know from where to bring it. Everything was in desolation. Achrzu, they announced, whoever knows where grains are available, inform us. Osu gavro charsha, a mute individual came. Maybe it was the same person, because the Gemara here uses the expression Hahu Gavro Charsha. Maybe it's a reference to the same person. Oisiv Yodei A'ene V'chado Yodo A'sichro. He placed one hand on his eye and one hand on Sichro. As far as the definition of Sichro is concerned, Tosfos offers three possibilities. Rashi's explanation is the hole in a doorpost in which a bolt of the door is inserted. In other words, you have on many doors there's a type of latch or a bolt that you can move from side to side. If you want to keep the door locked, you push this bar or bolt into a hole that's in the doorpost, thereby locking the door. That's a sichra. So anyway, this cheresh, this mute individual, has one hand on his eye, one hand on the sichra. Amalu Mordechai, umi kaduchto, is there a place to shmo ein socher o socher ayin? Is there any place that has such a name? Bodku v'ashku. They found, in fact, there was such a place, and we saw that referred to above in our Mishnah, in the Braisa, a place called Bikas Ein Socher. Another incident, not related by way of content, but another incident related by way of Mordechai intervening in decoding something. Hano Shalosh Noshim. There were three women. The Aisu Shalosh Kinim. Each woman brought a cane. A cane is a sacrifice made of two birds. So you have three women, each woman carrying two birds for sacrificial purposes. Chada Omra, one woman said, Lezivasi. Vechada Omra, Leyamosi. Vechada Omra, Leoinosi. Three words, Zivasi, Yamosi, and Oinosi. Each woman saying a different word as reason for her bringing these birds. Savur mina, the people thought Zivasi equals Ziva Mamish. Ziva Mamish is a blood flow coming from a woman that's not part of her nida period. It's not part of the, we'll call it the expected cycle, the expected female cycle. Nevertheless, if a woman experiences three sightings of this ziva blood, she needs to bring a korban. The nature of the korban is a two-bird offering. One bird is brought as a chata sa'if, and the other one is brought as an oilo sa'if. So they thought that the woman who said zivasi, she meant because of she's bringing korban for her ziva. Liyamosi, liyamosi mamish. The word Yamosi Mamish, this expression means Zava. In other words, the same thing. That the blood flows, Yam is the sea. So that she was saying that she's experiencing a blood flow like the sea flows with water. In other words, she experienced this extensive blood flow. And Lo'oinosi, Lo'oinosa Mamish. The idea of Onosa Mamish also is a reference to Zava. The Kulhu, each one of these ladies needs chatos v'chada oila. One bird shall be brought as an chatos oif, and the other bird brought as an olas oif. These are two different kinds of bird sacrifices. Amalu Mordechai. Mordechai hears this, hears their conclusion regarding the way they define these three words, and says, Shema, maybe the woman who said l'zivasi, Shema, maybe her intention is bezov sikna. Sikna means she became endangered. She experienced, some health or life-threatening experience as a result of her blood flow, that she feels now that she's saved and healthy, she feels a sense of gratitude and wants to bring a nedova, a voluntary a gift bird offering made of two birds. We will see shortly that a olas nedova, nidvas oif, a bird nedova offering, you bring two birds, but both birds are brought as an ola. Likewise, shema biyam sikna, shema bi'aina sikna. Each one of these ladies, the lady that said l'zivasi, maybe she experienced a threat because of her ziva flow. The one who said l'yamosi has nothing to do with blood flows. Maybe she simply had a sea travel. The yam, the sea, she was endangered by something to do with the ocean or with the seas. And shema bi'eno sikna, the other lady became endangered because of something to do with her eyes. And these three ladies are each one bringing a voluntary bird offering. Dekulu oilois ninu. Each one of these bird offerings are two birds, each one of which is an ola. Baduk v'ashkehu. In fact, they checked it out and found that these three ladies were bringing a voluntary bird offering. V'hainu disnan. With this, we can understand that which is taught in the following Mishnah. This is a Mishnah from Maseches Shkolim. It says there, Psachya, it's a name of a person, Al Hakinim. Psachya, the person in charge of the money supply used for buying birds, his name was Psachya, and Ze Mordechai. He happened to be, Psachya was Mordechai. Loma Nikro Shmoi Psachya. Why is Mordechai called Psachi when his name is really Mordechai? Sheposeach dvarim v'dorshan. He opens up things that otherwise are unclear, and he darshans them, explains them, like we saw liyamosi and liyinosi. V'yodea b'shivim loshon, and he knows 70 languages. The Gemara asks, well, what's the big deal that he knows 70 languages? Kulu Sanhedrin Nami Yadi Shivim Lashon. You'll notice that we have a long question that is illustrated by the long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You notice a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. The Gemara is asking, why does the Mishnah in Shkolim emphasize that he knew 70 languages when the entire Sanhedrin knew 70 languages? Diomar Rabbi Yochanan ein moshivin b'Sanhedrin elo bale chochma, bale mara, bale koima, bale zikna, bale kshofim. We don't have seated in the Sanhedrin in the high court other than people that are bale chochma, wise individuals, bale mare, people that have a certain fine look to them, bale koma, tall and imposing individuals, bale zikna, people of wisdom, of age, bale kshofim, people who are knowledgeable in black magic. And what's important for our discussion right now is that which appears now dashed, underlined, the yoidim shivim lashon. And the members of the Sanhedrin should know 70 languages. Shalotei Sanhedrin Shemazvi Piyat Torgumen, so that there should be no need for the Sanhedrin to hear the cases being pleaded in front of them through an interpreter. many things are lost through interpretation. Therefore, if the Sanhedrin knows the language of those appearing in front of them, they don't need someone who will interpret. So what's the significance of Mordechai that he was featured in the source? Elo dahave bayo lishni v'dorish. He knew how to combine expressions, not just awareness of language, but he knew how to maneuver within languages and decode things. And we saw that with his treatment of Ein Socher and Gagas Trifin. That's bile. Bile is to mix things up. Lishni, different language, different terms, expressions. Vidarish, and explain them. Vainu diftiv, and with that we also understand the reference to this individual, the Mordechai Bilshon. Bilshon having to do with this idea of maybe it's a contraction expression of boleil lishonos. In fact, in modern Hebrew, this expression is used. A balshan is someone who is an expert in language and word origins. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.